Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Today on Quick Science Podcast, roster cutdowns coming. Patriots got to go from 90 to 53 when they throw somebody overboard who had some value. Is that a failure or is it shrewd business? Also, starting to turn into the opening week against the Pittsburgh Steelers. What do we know? What do we say? What do we got? All that and more on Quick Science Podcast. Hey, what's up, everybody? Tom E. Curran alongside Phil Perry, and of course, our producer, Ryan Preventure. A quick programming note. This is the final podcast, which will be brought to you under the title Quick Slants the Podcast. We're going to have a little veer. It's going to be called Tom Curran's Patriots Talk Podcast from here on in. The reasons for that are not to excise my guy, Phil, and put me at the top of the masthead, which is something I said, hey, Phil and I are 50-50 on the thing. The reasoning is we want to try and assemble our Celtics talk, Patriots talk, whatever other talk podcast we have under one particular umbrella to make it easier for folks to generally find us when they search for team-specific podcasts in the Boston market.
Yeah, I just feel like it's about time that you have your name in lights hanging above a podcast by now. I mean, it's 2019. You've been at it. I've said this many times. You're old. You've been at this a long time. And so this has been a long time coming, right?
So this is like a lifetime achievement award?
Yeah, we should be celebrating this.
I mean, my first podcast was 1977, really documenting the explosiveness of the Boston Red Sox and George Scott, Butch Hobson, and of course, Dwight Evans, Jim Rice, Freddie Lynn, all on down Fisk. Right. Yes. But this is, so now we are.
And look where you are now.
Uh-huh. So, yeah.
That's all.
Name and lights. Patriots Talk Podcast. Tommy Curran's Patriots Talk Podcast. From here on out, that ain't no here or there. You don't have to change a single thing. It's going to continue to come into your feed each week, and you've subscribed, and we appreciate that. Tell all your friends. Have them subscribe as well. Also, give them 5-star reviews. And please, anytime you want to, my door is open at Tommy Curran on Twitter. Phil's door is open at Phil A. Perry on Twitter. You fire us a quick question, we'll try to answer it here on the pod. If you give us a quick Patriots Talk Podcast hashtag, that's Patriots Talk Podcast. That just came to me right there, Ryan. So now we have something else to search or forget to search. All right, everybody, here's the game plan. First quarter, second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter, first quarter. We're going to come out of the chutes with conversation about some of the moves that have been made on Friday. Second quarter, we're going to take a look at the Thursday night game and who popped and dropped. Third quarter, we're going to take a look at exactly, has the quarterback landscape for the New England Patriots changed at all over the last 2 months, given what we've seen from Jarrett Stidham? And finally, in the fourth, we're going to start to move ahead to the Steelers and try and get a handle on the week that is coming up as the Patriots move towards their opener. All right, Ryan, hit the whistle. We are sitting here Friday afternoon having battled traffic on a Labor Day weekend. Phil, the Duke Dawson deal with the Denver Broncos. Initial reaction is always going to be, that's a second-round pick. Man, there's a lot of second-round picks that they've moved on from. Give me your perspective on Duke Dawson, your perspective on moving on from a second round pick, and do they have a habit of bludgeoning themselves when they try to pick somebody in the second round?
A couple things you could take away from this, I think. Number one, it just shows you how far opinions of Duke Dawson have fallen inside the building at One Patriot Place in about a year's time. He was a second round pick in 2018. So he's had two training camps with the team. Obviously, he got hurt in the first, missed almost his entire first season. I say almost because he actually was brought back onto the active roster, was taking up a 53-man roster spot for the second half of last year, couldn't get activated on game day.
And they
so
had
that
run,
right there maybe yeah. tells you something about how they felt
and
about
it. And they
him.
Had him running as a nickel in minicamp and early in training camp, correct?
He was out there with regulars during preseason
yes.
as a rookie, yes, as a slot corner. And that has become an important position around the league because everybody has found out, hey, you know what? These short to intermediate routes over the middle of the field, these things are efficient as hell. So offensively, everybody has somebody who can run those routes now. It's not just the Patriots in their little slots. And now defensively, everybody's trying to react. So who's your slot corner across the league? That's an important question to every defense. This year for the Patriots, it's going to be Jonathan Jones. It looked like if Jonathan Jones departs via free agency, Duke Dawson was the guy of the future. And now as a second round pick, he gone and you sell him low, Tom, because this was not a good summer for him. He did not have a good preseason. I know he had an interception in the preseason finale, about as lucky an interception as you will ever see at the NFL
Phil,
level.
You don't have to pile on.
It just, he didn't do much that I would say checks the positive column.
And he was consistently beaten on the simplest roots.
And that means in a deep cornerback room, you're probably not going to have a gig. And so they, I assume, took the approach, let's just see what we can get for this guy, because he was probably going to get cut anyway.
Which moves now to the conversation that I've had a little bit on Twitter today. When the news comes down, yes, you put him on the heap of guys that the Patriots have taken in the second round over the course of time, whether it's Jonathan Wilhite or Rashai Dowling or Jordan Richards. I mean, but there's two things at play here. One is, if you read Michael Hawley's book, War Room, it was stated in there, was fascinating, and I always go back to it. The second round is the time to take a chance on talent, is what Bill Belichick told Michael Hawley. That's when you're looking at guys who are not first round picks for a variety of reasons, but they are second round talents for some reason. There's something missing. There's an ability there that could have made them a first rounder, but they end up in the second round. So the Patriots habitually roll the dice, and I'd love to find the quote, and I know I've used it in stories past, I can find it, are going to roll the dice there. But in the third round, they're going to ratchet back and try and take good football players. I mean, they're all good. They're trying to get good football players.
Sure.
Whatever. But I find that interesting. I also find it interesting on a couple other accounts for the Patriots. Yeah, it's on a tee for you. You're in the 40s, 50s, or 60s of the guys who are coming off. It should be easier to get someone then. But to me, if you're able to populate your roster with talented players otherwise, whether it be undrafted, trades, free agency, it's neither here nor there. If there is an epidemic of not being able to find good football players, then you look at the second round lack as being something that you hold up and say, see, this is evidence they don't know what they're doing. Really, to me, it's just a curiosity, not evidence of anything, Phil.
Well, I think it's evidence of the fact that they're willing to take risks, because you mentioned some of the names, but, you know, put Cyrus Jones in there.
Sure.
You know, you put Tavon Wilson in there if you want to. Another second round guy that nobody thought was a second rounder that they took and ended up being a special teams guy for 4 years here. So I think that's all it's evidence of in the loss of not Duke Dawson as a player, but the inability to hit on that particular pick is mitigated by the fact that you found an undrafted rookie corner in JC Jackson who looks like a real contributor. So if you suck in all those other roster building capacities, then those misses start to pile up and they will start to hurt you. And if you don't have Tom Brady a quarterback, maybe we recognize some of those losses a little bit more often. But they have enough hits that you look at it and you say, is this really going to break them one way or the other? And Tom, it gets back to, I think, what we've seen over the last handful of years as the college game has changed and as college players have realized, hey, I should be getting out of this thing early and going pro, mm-hmm. even if I'm not going to get drafted, because it'll bring me one step closer to being a free agent and potentially making some big money, is that, and you've seen this with the smart teams across the league, everybody's drafting in bulk, the smart ones at least. You look at the Eagles, you look at the Patriots last 2 years, because everybody realizes nobody knows Nobody knows. Nobody knows who's going to hit. So you just throw as many picks as possible at the wall and see what sticks.
Juwan Williams is a perfect example as we discuss this position. Juwan Williams is a project. He is an outlier, a unicorn at the position that they're going to try and figure out something to do with him as a second rounder. To Bucky Jones, back in the day, 1998, the Patriots made him a first round pick. I think it was like 24th, 26th. Might have been 29th. Either way, he is a perfect example as well of that kind of gamble. He was a first-round player taken, but could have just as easily been a second. Same with Sony Michel. You're betting on somebody who's a first-round talent as an athlete and has a bad knee, perhaps, for Sony Michel, or is untested as a cornerback in Tabucky Jones' instance, or in Joe Williams' instance. You haven't seen a lot of 6'4", 208-pound cornerbacks succeed. So you get him in and say, we'll figure out something with this guy. And if we don't, we took a shot. We put a lot of money on that number. And if it comes up, we're going to be rich, i.e. Rob Gronkowski. And if it doesn't, and a lot of money is relative, we put a fair amount of money on it. So I think it's a fascinating way of doing business. I will say this, though, the caveat to it is, while we can say, shit, man, they got J.C. Jackson and they have Keon Crossan and they have Jonathan Jones, who's undrafted as well. So what can you kick about? What you can point to are other positions unaddressed. To me, tight end would fit in there, not specifically for 2018. I think Chris Herndon would be a guy that absolutely you could look at.
He's the one that was taken.
Yeah. So Chris Herndon was, I think, a fourth round pick.
The Patriots didn't have a pick between Duke Dawson and Juwan Bentley, who was taken in the fifth round in that draft in 2018.
At some point, I'm sure they did. I'm not trying to.
Right. No, I know what you did, but they didn't make a selection.
Right. But it's the tight end position in particular that I look at on this team and say, since 2000 and I can't remember, I think 14. And I wish I had my story that I wrote in the spring about it in front of me. The only draft pick they've spent is on Ryan Izzo. Today they released fullback / H-back / tight end Andrew Beck. But that's a position that as the draft goes along, you need to populate that spot, especially when you're dealing with a tight end who's got a disc problem and could fall off the ledge at any time. Additionally, you have a blocking tight end who doesn't catch very well. I mean, it was such a priority in 2010 that it had a second round pick and a fourth round pick put there, and they set records for a team that needed it because they were shallow at wide receiver and at running back to a degree back in that period of time. But it just, I don't know why it has been such a forgotten position ignored position.
I think part of it from talking to people at the combine this past year, because tight ends, you know, we all assumed that they would be in the tight end market in this year's draft. And you had a few big names right at the top in Iowa's TJ Hawkinson, who I loved coming out, and also Iowa's Noah Fant. They were probably the two best in the class. But I remember talking to someone in the scouting department for another team, another NFL team, and basically told me the difficult thing about that spot in particular, you don't have a lot of guys that project well to the NFL because there aren't a lot of college offenses that use the tight end in the way that NFL programs want to use them, meaning inline, capable run blocker, capable route runner. You have a lot of tight ends that are essentially receivers.
Mm-hmm.
Your Jay Sternbergers, for example. Jay Sternberger isn't blocking anybody, and I think, sadly for him, did he get injured yesterday?
Yeah, I think so.
So he's not going to be doing anything this year, but that's the kind of player that you're seeing come out at that position. Noah Fant might be in a similar category. TJ Hawkinson, what made him a top 10 pick is the fact that he does both, and there's just very, very few of those guys now that are coming out. So yeah, maybe that's why the Patriots look at it and they say, there's nobody in this class that even could come close to doing anything we would ask him to do. Why are we going to spend a draft pick on him?
That's the interesting thing, though, because there's nobody in the NFL either that does what they seemingly want to ask them
that's
to
a good
do.
Point. Right.
And to me, I wonder if the way the Patriots use the position is an anachronism. Yeah, they got a shit ton out of Rob Gronkowski, but you can't keep running tight end down the seam and having him get hit by a Rhino or a Volkswagen every time. You need to somehow incorporate something different into your offense. Again, Josh McDaniels, Bill Belichick, Bill O'Brien, Tom Brady, smarter than me, but as you talk to Tom Brady about all the times that Gronk was hit and injured, and how often it came on the same route. I'll call it route. I'm from up northeast.
That's Mayo in the back of your head going,
can't root. Call it a route.
Root.
This guy. It's almost a route that is, that's a good story for us. Should the seam route go away for the Patriots? I mean, look what they did to friggin' Ryan Izzo. Matt LaCosse almost got destroyed.
Yep.
Gotta cut the shit with that spot.
It's dangerous. Dangerous play. Risk reward.
Anyway, is there a cut that would blow your goddamn Phil Perry socks off?
Good question. Is there a cut that would blow my socks
goddamn
right
Phil Perry socks off
my feet? Well, I mean, barring the obvious, right? I mean, somebody like Keon Crossan getting cut would surprise me. But what is that saying? You know, he's a seventh round pick 2 years ago. They think not that he's going to be a seven-time Pro Bowler or whatever, but he could be their next Matthew Slater. Like, I could see them seeing him fill that role whenever Matthew Slater moves on. He's going to be your top gunner. He's going to be on all your kick units. He's going to be a special teams leader. I think he has that personality where he's already trying to embrace that aspect of it, where he's trying to be a strong locker room presence. Somebody like Ryan Izzo would surprise me. I mean, that was somebody who only I had on the roster about 2 weeks ago, but now feels like a lock, which, again, seventh round pick.
Has to be a lock.
Yeah. He has to be, right? But does he? Is anybody clamoring to pick up Ryan Izzo if they release him? I don't know.
I think the Patriots are going to release some guys as they have in years past, Camus Grugier-Hill and Cravon LeBlanc, who go on and play football for other football teams, and people will say, well, that what why? Because there was no room at the inn at that particular position. Phil, other positions that the Patriots would prioritize in trying to make a deal?
I would say you still have to look at tight end, Tom. I mean, you're looking at potentially starting the season with one healthy body there named Ryan Izzo that you know relatively little about. You think he can run block. You think he can catch it when he's open and he gets an opportunity. But you need depth there, in my opinion. You probably need some sort of special teams contributor at that position outside of Izzo, because that's usually what you do at that position. So that tight end, I'm looking at tight ends.
Also, I would mind for a punt returner as well. I've been told that Julian Edelman's finger is fine, and it's going to be a non-story. It will not impact him for the first game of the season against Pittsburgh. But I still think that I wouldn't be surprised if they brought in a specialist who can do some work as a punt returner specifically instead of gunner, who is probably going to easily pass through to their practice squad if they want him there, and Braxton Berrios. So those are another couple spots. Ryan, great patience there by you. Ryan just got on the cans and said, we got to move to the second quarter. So let's get to that second quarter. Let's move on to Thursday night's game. Who popped? Who dropped?
You mentioned Gunnar Olszewski. I feel like you watch that guy and you can't help but think of him as a Patriots type. I mean, energy, effort, somebody who is constantly improving, which Bill Belichick said on his conference call Friday morning, and has improved a great deal since the time he arrived in New England as a corner turned receiver / returner. So I look at him and I say he helped himself. I would think if you're the Patriots, you're hoping he gets to your practice squad. I wonder if there's not another team out there that says, hey, we really need a kick/punt returner. And they say,
I mean, they've
you
all
never
been,
know.
They've
you
all
never
been,
know. A lot of teams out there that probably feel like they have 44 NFL players.
Yeah, but the kid out of Bemidji, to me, my thing with picking guys up is you've just spent a shit ton of time with them.
With your guys.
Right. And unless you are a team that's only 48 deep, then you're probably going to say, why do I want to bring in a Bemidji State corner? But Cravon LeBlanc, again, a good example of a guy who a team said, you know what, we want him. And that was an undrafted player that was impressive enough for the Patriots that the Chicago Bears took him.
Feels like a culture guy, too, in a lot of ways. I mean, he was
Gunner.
What Julian Edelman was coming out. I mean, he's a nobody coming out of college, just changing positions, who brings you all kinds of freakish energy and effort, and he's out there making tackles defensively. I don't think this is what got Duke Dawson traded, but I wouldn't be shocked if the coaching staff looked at this play and said, there goes Duke again, because at the end of that game, Gunnar Olszewski is somebody chasing down a tight end down the middle of the field and making a hard tackle on a much bigger player down the middle of the field, and Duke Dawson is there just kind of half-speeding it after the guy and kind of two-hand touched him down as Gunnar Olszewski was taking the guy down. It's a second-round pick who's watching as an undrafted free agent is taking a play away from
great,
him.
Great observation.
At the end of the game in the fourth preseason
that's
game.
That's the shit that matters that we need to pay attention to more frequently and relate it to folks if they don't see it themselves.
Who popped for you?
It has to be very simple. Let's stick with those wide receivers and talk about Demaryius Thomas. Talked about him extensively already after the game and in our writing. So what can we spin out of the Demaryius Thomas contributions that we find interesting? My understanding is Tom Brady is very pleased with what he sees he's going to be able to get from Demaryius Thomas. And a lot of it is going to be the back shoulder stuff that we saw Jarrett Stidham get a touchdown with, but also that timing stuff. And I'm ready to say right now that Demaryius Thomas might have a better season than Josh Gordon. If everything stays equal, Demaryius Thomas will be more valuable to the Patriots than Josh Gordon.
Well, when you look at, it's funny that you say that, because as you were talking before you made that statement, I was thinking, is there any chance he is, even coming off an Achilles injury,
Watch his ass get cut before this podcast is over.
No, I don't think that would knock my socks off. Demaryius Thomas getting cut, I would have naked feet.
Minus two socks.
Yeah, little toes dangling out in the open air. Can he be a more reliable Josh Gordon? Similar size, you're going to have them doing similar things, I would imagine, as players still in certain ways getting integrated into this offense, where you're saying to them, hey, run your slants, run your back shoulder fades, run your deep ends. We're not going to be asking you to run option routes over the middle of the field and have, you know, some sort of psychedelic connection with Tom Brady we're going to keep it simple with you guys. You're big bodied receivers who can pluck the football away while you're still covered. Could Demaryius Thomas just be the guy who lasts the entire season and maybe doesn't have the freakish athletic ability that Gordon has, but is with you for 16 games, whereas Gordon, you're less sure of that?
Here's what Thomas and Gordon and N'Keal Harry, if he reemerges at some point, can do for you. If they're working outside the numbers and a team is running cover two, the size of them demands that a safety shade over and play a little bit over the top. Do you want to go one-on-one with Gordon? Do you want to go one-on-one on the other side with Demaryius Thomas? Where is that safety going to move to, and how does the rotation move after that? Because if you have on the right sideline Gordon on the boundary, as a boundary receiver, XYZ, whatever you want to call him out there, you're going to have a safety who has to help at some point, or he's going to get bodied. And then you have slants that can run from the weak side of the formation on the backside to kind of move that other safety up to deal with it. And then you have the opportunity to go down the field. So that bigness, while the speed kills and everyone gets all, you know, eroticized over that, the bigness can be a bitch too.
Well, and that's where N'Keal Harry, if he could work his way back, I think could be huge, because if you can somehow get all three of those guys on the field at the same time, you're without a tight end who can really stretch and threaten the seam, in my opinion. So if you have those two big bodies on the outside, as you mentioned, and say they're playing cover two, and you have safeties over the top of both, that opens that middle of the field wide the hell open. Is Julian Edelman going to be the guy running straight down the middle of the field? I guess it could be, but you don't have Gronk anymore to do that. I don't think it's going to be Ryan Izzo. Who is that guy that stretches that field vertically down the middle? It could be N'Keal Harry, or, you know, you interchange any of those three pieces, those three big receivers, and then all of a sudden you have something, but you don't have N'Keal Harry right now.
And maybe again, this is a conversation that we could have with Josh McDaniels and Bill when we go to breakfast with them over at the diner. We talk to them about the fact that, so we were hypothesizing that you haven't done a good job at finding any pass catching tight ends. Have you actually concluded that a pass catching tight end might be an anachronism because there's so many big receivers out there who can do different things and fortify that spot without having the tight end label to them? So we'll probably go to lunch or breakfast with them this week prior to the Steelers opener.
It's a good idea. I mean, I love it. You're less predictable. I mean, you're more predictable
at breakfast.
You're more predictable if you don't have a tight end do that job. That's the great thing about the tight end. You could keep them in to pass protect. You could keep them in to run block. You could run them down the seam. If you have a receiver down there, the number of things he can do for your offense on a snap-to-snap basis are just fewer. That's all.
Okay. Poppers and droppers. So we hit Demaryius Thomas. We hit Gunner. Defensively, I don't really think anybody.
We sort of hit on Juwan Williams already. I would put him in the popped category. You know, just the ability to show that he can play safety as well as corner.
One thing that pops to me is pass interference review. It continues to be something that I am fully in favor of because of the way the officials in New York are using a very high bar to review it. They're not just going to say, oh yeah, look at, he definitely got some jersey there. We're going to drop a flag on the field and give him a 25-yard pickup. Or we're going to put the ball on the one because I think he got jostled. Nope, they're not doing that. It's got to be clear and obvious. And it almost feels like it's got to be clear and obvious in live motion. Mm-hmm. Because when we saw Keon Crossan get a pretty decent grab last night, and I'm not sure who the receiver was. I'm sorry, folks. I was watching. But Crossan had a grab a little bit in a turn and it impeded. It materially affected the receiver, but it wasn't egregious. And they said, no foul. So I wonder how review is going to play this year and whether coaches have looked. And we're obviously dealing with the New England sample and just a few other games I've watched. But our coach is going to say, shit, man, we need guys to get rototilled and no flag in order to win one of these things.
I like it. That's what I want. I want the standard to be what happened in the Saints-Rams game. That's the one time I'm really okay with it.
Yeah, the cut the shit.
Even a slight degree, maybe less than that, but it has to be close.
Florio calls it the what the hell standard. I call it the cut the shit standard. Okay?
I think both of those are apt.
Yeah. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to wheel into the third quarter now. Ryan, hit the whistle, will you? All right, we went back to the sidelines and conferred with our guy Ryan Preventure, producer here, podcast producer extraordinaire, and he said, hey, nobody dropped. And this is something that Phil and I talked about in the locker room prior to coming out for today's pod, was that, look, a lot of these guys are down on their luck already. Let's not pile on. Some of you are going to get released. So we're not going to go through the whole exercise of just, dropping deuces on foreheads right when guys are about to get dropped. And we also forgot to do the dropped, but that's okay. So here we are in the third, and actually I'm going to veer just a little bit. And Phil, with Stidham showing what he did and kind of rebuffing the perception that we had of him coming out of the draft, that it might be a little bit of a project for him to not overheat mentally when he took a snap, has the quarterback landscape for the New England Patriots changed at all over the last 2 months, given what we've seen from Jarrett Stidham and given the fact that Tom Brady is up at the end of this year and has the ability to become a free agent?
I think the Brady contract has changed it significantly, potentially, right? I mean, that was not part of the equation, I don't think, for any of us a month ago. But it is now, and so I think it does give you, if you're the Patriots, it has to give you a little bit more urgency. This is a team that has contingencies for its contingencies. So if you're not preparing for Brady maybe being gone in 2020, you're not doing what's best for the football team.
And haven't you seen now, again, in the last month and a half, a reason to say, I don't feel as shitty as I did about this. I don't even know if Bill Belichick would say I feel bad or leery of a life without Tom Brady. I think he'd miss it. I think he'd also look at it as a challenge. I don't believe the whole, he has to win a Super Bowl without Brady mantra that people really subscribe to. He'd rather win a Super Bowl with Tom Brady and compete with Tom Brady as long as Tom Brady does things for the rate that Bill Belichick would like to see him do it for. Anyway, all that said, I think this is encouraging that Bill Belichick has to feel more encouraged about his contingency plan, the most immediate one, given what he's seen.
Oh, I think so. I mean, the physical skill set alone is promising. I think the fact that he's improved, again, we're talking about improvement over the course of about a month here. And when we are seeing visible improvement, you know the coaching staff is seeing it, and even more so. So where Jarrett Stidham is choking the life out of the football on the first day of competitive practice and has no idea where to throw the thing, to all of a sudden, yes, still being a hair late at times on throws. I thought Thursday night in the finale, third down throw to Josh Gordon that eventually ended the drive and led to a Gostkowski field goal, was a little late to the sideline. He had the guy, would have been a first down. You get a chance to put it in the end zone. He waits too long and the pass gets deflected. That's something that needs to improve, but it's not something that is all that unexpected for a rookie quarterback. So I think they feel like they must feel like, Tom, they have something to work with at least. However, I will say this, especially with the Brady contract situation being what it is, and you will know what his situation is for 2020 by the time the draft rolls around, but would you be shocked if they drafted a guy in the second round next year?
No, not at all, because as we talked about in the pregame yesterday, as you spoke about, throw bodies at a position, because it's hard to get exactly what you want. In addition, there's some attrition in the NFL. The Washington Redskins actually played really smartly, and you know that's found money, you know, blind squirrel nut operation there.
Shanahan, though, Bill Belichick's
you're
buddy.
Exactly friggin' right. Yep.
That's his buddy.
So you took RG3 in the first round as the Redskins, and then you came back and said, you know what, this friggin' guy, Kirk Cousins at Michigan, he's just, I like the way he does his business. He's a winner. Let's take him in the fourth. And he ended up being a guy that they franchised two times and it has a $90 million guaranteed contract in Minnesota. So sensible. If you want to have Patriots 3.0, that's the thing you do. We're going to cut the third quarter short. We had a lot of running plays. We've ground out the clock. Blow the whistle, Rat. All right. We have not yet done a whole hell of a lot of studying on the Pittsburgh Steelers, but by the time you hear from us next on Tuesday, we will have turned the page and been full in on getting ready for the first game of 2019. And I always look, Phil, at the seasons as a 20-game season. You got 4 preseason and 16 regular season, you're guaranteed. We're already 1/5 of the way through, or 20% of the season is gone, and we are entering the second fifth now with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And following the Steelers, it's going to be Miami, the Jets, and the Bills in succession. 2 at home, 2 on the road. How do things look to you for the New England Patriots entering the Steelers game, health-wise, scheme-wise, and how do they look for that first quarter of the season in your estimation?
I think that first quarter of the season should be a relative breeze if they can get past week one. I feel like the Steelers are, even though they're near the top of the conference year in, year out for the last decade or so, they're sort of a forgotten competitor in this conference this year. I think everybody assumes, oh, they lost Antonio Brown, they lost Le'Veon Bell. You know, look at the Texans, look at the Chargers. For a long time, it was look at the Colts, and now Andrew Luck's gone. And so I think the Steelers rise up a handful of notches, and they could be, there's an argument there for the Steelers to be the number 3 team in the conference, even now without their best receiver from last year. However, I think the Patriots are really well suited to make life very difficult for Ben Roethlisberger in the Steelers passing game. You have Juju Smith-Schuster, you have James Washington, you have someone by the name of Deontay Johnson out of Toledo, who is an impressive rookie receiver, somebody I liked potentially for the Patriots in the draft. But none of those guys are Antonio Brown, and I love Juju Smith-Schuster, but you maybe throw a couple bodies at him and make Ben Roethlisberger go everywhere else, and I think it's going to be hard for them to make a lot of hay. So I like the matchup for the Patriots in week one.
I also do, and especially because they're going to be at home, and the Patriots are going to, as always, unearth a game plan that the Steelers, dating back to 2002, when they got absolutely bombarded by the Super Bowl champion Patriots in the 2002 opener and the lid lifter at Gillette Stadium. Ooh. When the Patriots just came out and went sprinkler system on their defense with empty backfield. I think you're going to see a lot of Sony Michel coming out of the backfield. I think you're going to see a ton of James White. You haven't seen that in the preseason. And Josh McDaniels will have a very sophisticated plan to go on. Obviously, you're going to have some pass rush issues that you're going to have to deal with the Pittsburgh Steelers, Bud Dupree, and some of their other guys who get off the edge.
TJ Watt.
But I think the Patriots will be in good stead. Look, we got to get our NFL special preview show underway, and we're going to do that right now because we're running a little bit behind on that. So, ladies and gentlemen, we appreciate your time. We'll talk to you on Tuesday on Tom Curran's Patriots Talk podcast. Okay, that's Tom Curran's Patriots Talk podcast. You don't have to do anything. It's going to keep coming into you. All right, right down the line, right through the chute. We'll talk to you soon. Phil, Ryan, goodbye.
Bye.
around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.